Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, joined by the full crew. It's great that we have the full crew all the time these days. Bo, Cody, Tracy, all together. How are you guys doing?
Awesome.
Great.
Wonderful.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Good. We got Matt behind the glass. Karen sitting next to me. Cody, what's the topic today?
Politics isn't politics.
Yes, politics isn't politics. Here's what we mean. You know, for years, I've been talking about the danger of politics in an organization. And I often define politics as saying things for effect. Like when people say something, not because they really believe it, but they want to get some reaction out of somebody or get something done, but they're not being honest. Now, I've been thinking a lot about politics lately, seeing it play out in various organizations and that we work with. And so I thought we might want to talk about it on the podcast today. So I looked up the definition because I thought, I wonder what the root word in politics is. I wonder if dishonesty is in there or something like that. And it turns out it comes from Aristotle and it had to do with governing people. And I thought, how interesting that we use the word politics in a detrimental way because we've come to expect government is often dishonest and there's corruption. So we've taken on the word politics to mean something totally different than it was supposed to be. So I thought, so what is the word we should be using? And I said, well, what about manipulation? And as it turns out, the definition of manipulation that I found was the same as the definition I had used 20 years ago in the five dysfunctions of a team for politics. And the definition was this: manipulation is coercive or unethical behavior driven by the goal of exploiting or controlling another person for your own personal gain. Oh my gosh, I thought that was politics. And so I want to have a conversation about manipulation today, because when we call it that, it's a lot easier to spot and to dissect and to stop.
So when I first hear about manipulation, there's like overt manipulation when it's obvious that it's happening. But there are so many subversive or covert ways that people can be manipulative. What are some of those, Pat, that you see in the workplace that where people are being manipulated, but it's sort of cloaked?
Right. Well, you know, Bo, it's a good question. And it's worth saying what you said too. Some people do this kind of accidentally or because of their wounds or they're in a bad spot in a given day. Some people do it on purpose because they know they've taught themselves or they've learned that that's how to get things done in an organization, which is poisonous, of course, which is why teams have to build trust to avoid this. Because if you trust one another, and people are vulnerable, they're not going to engage in this, which is why people need to find out if there's trust in their organization, do the team assessment that we have and figure it out and hit those issues. But when somebody is doing it on purpose, I found an article that said there's like seven different ways that people go about doing this on purpose. And the first one I want to put is so blatant, but it's worth saying, and it's just lying. I mean, lying is just a form of manipulation. No, that's not true. You know, I didn't say that. So that's probably the most obvious one. Here are the others, though. I think this is interesting. Guilt tripping is one. Flattery, which is not positive, honest, you know, calling out somebody's strengths, but flattery for the sake of manipulation. Triangulation, where you bring in a third party to take the pressure off yourself and you try to use them. Moving the goalposts, that's a really interesting one where you're constantly saying, no, that's not it. You did what I said, but that's not it. Projecting onto somebody else something that you're feeling and blaming them for that. And then there's one last one that's really weird. It's called love bombing, which is like just saturating someone in attention and affirmation and everything, but for the purpose of eventually isolating them and making them feel cut off. This is so interesting. So any of those jump out at you as something you've seen in organizations or experienced?
You know, as you went through all of those, Pat, I love this topic that you chose, the politics isn't politics, because like when we're in front of a leadership team and writing the difference between smart and healthy, on the healthy side, we say the healthiest organizations in the world have minimal politics. But what you mean is all of those seven things that you just said, you know, like the right. Idea that, boy, in those organizations, the healthiest teams and the healthiest companies, they're not overly flattering to people or love bombing people or lying. And there is I think when we're in that room, we the other phrase we use is like changing politics is changing what you do or say based on who's in the room, you know, and that's sort of the classical way that we understand someone being political, even in the political sphere, is, oh, when you're in front of these constituents, you'll say one thing. And when you're in front of these constituents, you'll say another thing just to get liked or get ahead or get votes. And that all of what you described, all seven of those happen in the context of manipulation in organizations.
Yeah. I wonder if Aristotle didn't intend it that way. And then along came others and decided, I mean, Machiavelli is the one who said, no, you should not be honest with people to get what you want. And then some people said, yeah, that's really politics. So, I mean, we can all lament the fact that politics is infused with manipulation, but we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about how to make sure that the word politics as we use it today, which is really manipulation, gets rooted out of our organizations. And I think knowing these seven different types is actually a better way to see it happening so you can recognize it and call it out.
And even the you know, a couple of them that jumped out to me, Pat, is like the obviously the most overt one, the lying one. But there's so many variations of that, which is like not telling the whole truth based on who, like, oh, I'm in a meeting and I went to another meeting with a subset of people and I only told half of the truth, which is, but you tell it in a way that sort of makes them think something different than what happened in the original meeting. And so the lying one, I think you could break down almost every one of those. The flattery one, like, oh, you're in a room with a individual, you're like, you're great at your job and we really love you. And then you're in a different room and you have a whole different way of assessing that person's character, their contribution. All of those, I think, jumped out in different ways.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at it that way.
So much of it comes back to how you started this, which is words said for effect, because there is a time and place for how and when to share information, right? So lying, if it is an intent to deceive, that's what's so detrimental, right? Flattery, you might be saying the same words to somebody, but intended for the effect to make you look good, or perhaps sometimes flattery is in hopes that the other person doesn't say something bad back to you, right? You try to build them up so that they won't tear you down.
Oh yeah. Flattery was the one that jumped off the page to me. I was like, oh, because we've all seen somebody be obsequious or overly praiseworthy of somebody. And you go, why are they doing that? And it's like, I'm going to soften them up so it's going to be harder for them to disagree with me. And it's really hard to call people on that because it's like, but they're being nice. And it's like, oh, if their intentions are pure and they're praising somebody, that's one thing. But if they're doing it for effect, it's one of the grossest things. That's the technical term, grossest things we see.
Well, and Pat, I love that you alluded to, hey, when teams don't have vulnerability-based trust, the bottom of the pyramid of the five dysfunctions, that can lead to all of these things. But even as you went through those seven, I think trust enables people to overcome politics in certain ways. Like you have to have trust in order to overcome some of that. But I was going to ask this as a question, but I don't want to mislead you. Like it feels like the antidote to all of those things is like honesty, you know, honesty, right? In terms of like, you can flatter someone if it's true. If it's like, oh boy, you're really great at your job, and I want to tell you that that's true about you and how you're adding value to the team. But I'm curious, like, what you think? What would you distill down as the anecdote to all those manipulative things that you just said?
So I would say it goes even beyond honesty, because as you guys were just saying before, it's like there's a time to say the right thing at the right time. I think it's pure intentions. Because they're like, if you're not saying something that needs to be said, but not quite yet, because it's not the right time, the person can't hear it, or it would violate their dignity. One could say, well, you're not being honest. So I think it's honesty and pure intentions that go together. Because if a person has pure intentions, they're not manipulating. Even if somebody goes, well, I took that as manipulation, and they can say, oh, I'm sorry, that's not what I intended. I will admit it and we can recover from that. So I don't want it to become so technical. I think that the question is, do you really have the best interests of the people around you at heart? Or are you doing something for your own gain? I have to tell you guys a story. I read this last night. I can't believe it. I didn't plan on talking about this, but it blew me away. A guy wrote an article recently. He used to be a professor, and he did research, scientific research. And he admitted, now I have to explain, he left academia and now works for a think tank. But he admitted that he wrote an article last year, and he purposefully left out the truth. He told some truth, but the larger truth he didn't include because he knew that it wouldn't get published if he included the bigger picture. And he said so, and he wrote it with other people. It got peer reviewed, but everybody knew that the only way they were going to get it published is if they told the narrative that the media and the scientific community were looking for. And it was crazy because he said, yeah, I was manipulating the audience so that I could get my paper published because that's the only way to advance my academic career. And in academia, they didn't want the truth. They wanted their narrative. And I couldn't believe it that he actually, that's like an institutional form of manipulation. And if people can do that, imagine during a meeting what they can do when they hold back a little information here or hold back a slide in the presentation here, because what they're really trying to do is get their way rather than have people engage in the truth.
Yeah, and I love that you told that in sequence with the pure intention part, because if that person had pure intentions and was rigorous around their research and did all thought they were doing the right thing and then missed a portion of the truth, that's entirely different. But to hear that someone was like, oh, I didn't have pure intentions, I actually violated the truth on purpose. And you're totally right. It changes the entire perspective if someone has pure intentions when they're on a team or in an organization.
Yeah, and Karen just reminded me that there's a difference between sins of omission and commission. So a sin of commission is going and telling somebody a falsehood to get what you want. A sin of omission is withholding that truth from them because you know that won't help you get what you want. Well, they're both forms of manipulation and what we used to call until 5 minutes ago, politics.
So, Pat, if somebody's listening to this and they hear lying, guilt trips, flattery, triangulation, moving the goalposts, projection, et cetera, exaggeration could be in there. And they're like, yeah, that's part of our team. That's part of the dynamic that I come to work with every day. What do they do? What should they walk away from this conversation and do?
I think that they should, we talk about this a lot. It's like, tell the kind truth in humility. I think they should go to the team and go, hey, you guys, you know something? I heard about this thing and it's about how people manipulate one another, sometimes without even trying or without even understanding it. Give them the grace to say, I know we're probably not doing this on purpose. And so give them the grace of saying, and I know I've done it before. I think all of us have done this before, but let's take a look at these things and figure out if maybe we could recognize that when we're doing it, because it really hurts all of us when we engage in this. So don't do it like I'm catching you doing it. Start by saying, I know I've done it before. And I will say that the guy that wrote that article, I looked at the comments afterward and some of the people were like, well, you're a coward for doing that. But then other people said, well, at least he's kind of blowing the whistle on the fact that this happens. Well, if you start with yourself and say, I've done it too, you give people the permission to say, yeah, I've done that too. Let's all agree to call each other out on that and realize that we're not going to be mad if somebody says, hey, I think you're moving the goalposts, or, hey, are you withholding some information there? Make it politically correct, interesting, to call people out on this stuff for the good of the team. I should say manipulatively correct.
Yeah, it's so good. And it will require something we've talked about a lot recently, which is that interpersonal courage. Because the reason that somebody wouldn't do that is probably for self-preservation. Because it is very unnerving to be the first person and raise your hand and say, I think this might be us. I think that we might have a culture of this. I've probably contributed to it, but I think that this is part of what we are. Because you're kind of entering the danger. You're putting yourself out there. And that might appear weak, right? You might now have a target on your back to be like, oh yeah, that's how we feel when we would step in and say, I think this might be true of us.
And that's why if the leader is the one to call this out and to acknowledge that all people do this, they've done it before, I want us to call each other on it. And if the leader says, and I will call it out whenever I see it, and I expect you to call me out on it too if you think I'm doing it, that has the best opportunity to change the culture of the team.
Yeah, and I love that you reemphasize that, Pat, if the leader's going first and leading in vulnerability. But it goes back to, I mean, we get questions like this all the time, like, I have a highly political or manipulative team. If I start saying, hey, I've been manipulative in the past, they're just going to use that against me. They're just like, that's how hyper political they are, is that I'm now giving them fodder that they might use against me. And it all goes back to, if you can't build vulnerability-based trust, then all of this, like the base of the triangle, Pat, the reason it's the biggest foundational piece, the biggest part of that triangle, is if you don't have trust, this will not, it can burn you, actually.
Yeah, that's why trust is at the heart of every single thing we do, whether it's building a team, a leader working on themselves, being humble. Trust is the foundation of all of this. I'm reminded of what Mark Twain said once, you know, always tell the truth and you don't have to worry about what you said. You don't have to remember what you said, or it was something along those lines. And I think when you go to a team, I was working with my son last night on something, and we were writing something, and something came up, and oftentimes I'll be the one to go, well, that's terrible. And he'll go, well, you wrote that, Dad. And it's like, well, you're probably right. It's still terrible. And when you're on a team where people can say stuff like that, it takes the politics or the manipulation out of it. And it always comes down to vulnerability-based trust.
So Pat, how does conflict play into this? Because I see conflict, you know, Bo, you mentioned courage. And I think it requires the ability to put yourself out there and say a difficult thing. So talk about that a little bit.
Well, isn't that ironic? If you don't have trust, Tracy, people aren't going to call each other on this stuff, because calling each other on this is conflict, right? It's like saying to somebody, you know, I'm sorry, I got to tell you, it feels like you're moving the goalposts on me here. Is that what's going on? If a person doesn't have some level of trust, which is why when we work with an executive team, we will spend the first hour of a two-day session just going into building some initial trust, getting them to get to the point where they can begin to tell each other things that before they couldn't do. So trust is necessary. Nobody wants to have conflict. Nobody wants to say, gosh, I feel like I'm being manipulated here. Am I wrong? If there's no trust, you don't think that person's going to answer honestly. And so you're probably not even going to put that out there.
And Pat, I would say the most quoted sentence from your book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, is this quote where you say, conflict with trust is the pursuit of the best idea. When you have trust, it's the pursuit of the best idea. Conflict without trust is politics. You actually say that phrase in the book. And so it's better probably said, conflict without trust is manipulation. I mean, this is exactly what we're talking about. The very thing that those seven things that you listed, if you're having conflict without the fundamental trust, you know, vulnerability-based trust, bottom of the pyramid, it is manipulation. It's about totem pulling and who wins the argument. And it's not about the best decision.
You know, I think it's worth saying here, as you were saying that, Cody, I was just thinking that we all do this sometimes. I mean, even with people we trust, if we're in a bad place, we get in an argument, we know that moment where we can know in retrospect when it slips from trying to discover the truth to screw it. Now I want to win this argument. And I'm going to bring out any piece of information. We've all slipped into that in our lives at one point or another. And so I think that I say that so that people struggling with this don't feel like it's a black and white thing. You're a manipulative person. You're not. I'm not. They are. There are people that use this really well, and that's dangerous. But for most of us, I think we slip into that in moments of insecurity or in woundedness, and we need to make it. It might be fun to sit down with a team and go, hey, see these seven things. Maybe lying isn't one of them. Which of them have you ever done in a moment of weakness? And like, I've flattered people before, hoping that it would allow me to, I mean, gosh, everybody's done it with a teacher in their life, right? You know, like, oh, I better be nice to my teacher because I want to get a good grade. And that is a form of manipulation, right? And flattery, triangulation, moving the goalpost, projection, guilt tripping. It might be good to start with going, let's all admit and come up with a time when we've done that to one another. And that might make it easier for people to say, we can actually begin to dismantle this and eliminate it.
You had mentioned one, and I don't really know what it means, and I might not be the only one. What is love bombing? You had mentioned that as the seventh on this. What is that?
Well, I thought this was strange too. I was like, what the heck is love bombing? And what it says is, it's when you shower somebody with attention and affection. like over the top. And it's not just flattery. It's like you spend all your time with them. And I've seen this happen in organizations where it's like, and you just like, just smother them with your, with like, you're my favorite person in the world. Now you've got them at a place where you can then withdraw that at any moment and you have power over them. Karen just looked this up. It's a love bombing. So this is from a different site, a form of psychological and emotional abuse that involves a person going above and beyond for you in an effort to manipulate you into a relationship with them. And, you know, gosh, when I think about it, it's like, I think people do this when they're young. Like they give a person a lot of attention and then they withdraw it and they hope that that's going to make them attracted to them. You know, like people in dating when they're young, young people, it's really dangerous.
Yeah, some of the most dangerous ones of these feel like when it's on the surface a good behavior, but for the wrong reason. That's when it's toxic, is it appears to be nice, kind, but the subtext is control, manipulation.
Absolutely. And that's how we think of what politicians do, which is a shame. There's one thing we haven't said, and I got to say this, because I was wondering, like, where is gaslighting on here? And what they said was gaslighting isn't one of the ways to do this. It is the way to hide the fact that you're manipulating somebody. So when they say, that's why gaslighting is so dangerous. Because when somebody says, I think you're moving the goalposts, they're like, I didn't move the goalposts. And you go, no, right here. See, you said this. What's wrong with you? Are you doubting my sense? You know what I mean? When somebody treats you like you're crazy, when you call them on this, which is why if you have a person in your life, in your company that gaslights, you have to help them understand that, or you have to have boundaries and not be around them, because that is the worst. That means I am going to call you crazy for genuinely calling me on my bad behavior.
Mm-hmm. You know, Pat, and I even think that goes not only to the seven things that you listed, but back to the anecdote that you talked about, which is when somebody has pure intentions, you can actually gaslight people around your intentions. Like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. Or, oh, that was not my intention to hurt you in that way, or to tell that story when you weren't in the room, or to change what decisions we made at that meeting. That even the gaslighting around the intention behind that thing can be so damaging and dangerous and manipulative that it happens all the time.
Right. If you, Cody, if I do something to you and I had bad intentions and you call me on it, and the only thing I can do at that moment is go, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I was a bad day and I took it out on you and I'm sorry. If I say, Cody, I'm surprised that you would think I would do that to you. All I'm doing is now making you feel bad about having an honest, valid reaction to something and taking it away from myself. That is really, really cruel. And yet, we've all done it. Hopefully not. No, I don't know that we've all done that. Maybe in a really bad moment, but that's something that is particularly dangerous. And we had to talk about that. Talk about this on your teams. Make this part of your vocabulary so that if something happens, somebody can say, oh my gosh, I think I just tried to manipulate you. I realize now that I do that. That would be a fabulous thing to happen on a team.
And it feels like another example of where so often messy is better than perfect. The messy teams that are willing to be vulnerable and be human and say, I screwed that up too, is such a more enjoyable place to work than, oh, we have to do this perfectly and I can't ever screw it up. You're going to. I have, you have, everybody has. A high trust, humble environment will cover so much of that. You'll have great conflict. It'll actually be more enjoyable place to work.
Oh, it changes everything. It changes. Not being manipulated is freedom. And manipulation in the workplace, in any organization, is poison. And that's what we're all about, is getting people to recognize that and get rid of it, even though we're flawed. Okay, we have a few announcements to make, right? One of them is that a lot of people wrote to us about the NFL podcast we did. And tonight is the first NFL game, if you're listening to this right when it gets released. So if you want the notes from that episode, Matt is going to post them both on this episode and on that NFL episode. So all of our notes and all of our statistics that we used, you can find that there. Also, we have an unpaid ad today. I think it's your turn, Cody.
Yeah, we formally fired Bo from the unpaid ad job that he used to have.
I'm available for hire.
Yeah.
If any other podcast wants an unpaid ad, I'm around. Okay.
So I have an unpaid ad that is directed at Bo in the same way he's been directing his ads at me.
I know what it is.
My unpaid ad is for documentaries, Pat.
I knew it.
I'm a big fan of documentaries. And Bo hates them so much and hates every time that I tell him about one so much that he's writing a book, and he wrote a sentence in the book that was specifically hateful to me, and he made me read the book. And it was about when people tell you about the documentary they watch. But he's wrong. It's an awful take. Documentaries are amazing. And Bo is on the wrong side of history on this one.
I'm learning to appreciate documentaries. I like them if they're not too long. But it's so fascinating how I'm learning to discover them. In fact, before the show started, we were joking around with Matt. And I was talking about how, you know, a fifth grade teacher really frustrates their students when they say, I have a treat for you all today. And you're thinking ice cream. And they say, we're going to watch a Ken Burns documentary. And Matt said, are you kidding? I love Ken Burns documentaries. It's
amazing. Yes.
And so I wanted to ask you all, what are your favorite documentaries?
Well, I will say Ken Burns did just put out a documentary on Benjamin Franklin, one of our founding fathers. And it is phenomenal. That one is very, very good. But there's a handful. I mean, they're all, here's the essence of this is like, while other people think that the real entertainment is around like catching all the Infinity Stones and different ways to save the world, the thing about documentaries is that the best stories that exist are real and they were lived. And so we're inventing all these fantasy stories that aren't even as good as some of the real things that have happened in real life. That's why I love documentaries.
So we need to give Bo an opportunity to explain why you hate documentaries.
No, I don't hate documentaries, but I have fallen into a pattern where every day at work, Cody walks in and goes, let me tell you about this documentary I watched last night. And it feels a little manipulative, okay, to be totally honest. And I have this belief that actually what he's doing is watching 2-minute TikTok videos and saying that he's actually watching a documentary.
Only slightly less smug than every day I walk in and Bo goes, let me tell you about this new book I read last night, just to throw it in there that he reads a book a day. So we all have toxic traits, Bo. And I'm sorry that mine is informing you of really great stories that really happened in the world.
Now, I have to tell you about a documentary I watched last week, which was fascinating. I was on the edge of my seat. I couldn't stop watching it. It was about something called the Oxford comma. I was just enthralled by it, I have to tell you. And I really highly recommend it. You can find it anywhere, I'm sure. And with that, we are going to bring this episode to a close. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We love our listeners. Cody and Bo love each other, just in case you don't know that. And we will talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.